Welcome to the Feudal Anime Podcast. I'm your host, Jack, and joining me today is Rick. How you doing today, Rick?
Well, you know, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. I'm not complaining at all. What about yourself?
I'm doing all right. Can't complain too much. It's a beautiful day. Here in Arizona, it is actually getting colder every day, which is nice compared to the blistering heat that is usually around.
I'm sorry, sir. You have no sympathy from me.
Well, how's the weather out there for you then, Rick?
Well, it's a bit cloudy, a lot cold. I'm up here in New England, but, you know, it's almost Christmas. I'm hoping for a white one. We'll see.
Yeah, well, that'll be very nice if you get a white Christmas.
Yeah. Alrighty, so I realized there was a lot of content, and it was probably a good idea that we cut it into two, because you don't want to gloss over too much.
Right.
Where did we leave off?
We left off talking about the third general and Simon and Yoko trying to escape the prison confinement, and how she came to a realization as to what kind of person Simon is. That no matter what, he will drive forward if he has a goal, a specific goal. We also were talking about his evolution, so to speak. After Kamina died, he went through this great depression, this point in which he was completely sad and broken. But also, we glossed over the fact that Simon, during that time frame, really blamed himself for what had happened. And this is because he had seen Yoko and Kamina kiss before the final fight with the first general. And he couldn't get it out of his head. He was just so distraught from that, so heartbroken, because he thought that Yoko loved him when she didn't. She had a love for Kamina.
And then Simon kind of felt blame for not saving him out of potential spite and mixed feelings.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that I could see how that would really affect him. But
yeah. And considering that his mental state, how he feels about himself and everything else, plays a big role in how the machine works and Gurren Lagann in general works. His emotions play a big part.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, because it's not necessarily fighting spirit that runs it. It's emotional state of mind, if you will.
Exactly.
So yeah, he was feeling very guilty about did he or didn't he really not defend Bro to the best of his ability, or Kamina.
Exactly.
But moving on to this fight, you've got him going from a shell of a man, and the daughter of the Spiral King comes in to play a huge role here, where she's just the supportive, you can do anything you need to kind of thing. And she goes, tell me about Bro. And they talk for a while, and it's kind of cool. And you see him just idolize this man to just almost God status. And you can feel the loss, and you can see his slow progression towards becoming his own man beyond what Bro would do. And that's what we left off on last time, where it was understanding what Bro was saying when he was saying, don't believe in the me that believes in you, believe in the you that believes in you. He was saying you need to have self-confidence and you need to stand on your own two feet. Don't be the man that you perceive me to be. Be the man that I know you can be. And he goes from that and moves forward onto the last potential fight. And he realizes that in this fight that, hey, I can take over this flying machine. Guess who can fly now? It was kind of awesome move. Yeah. He ejects the gunman.
Right, but it's not even the final fight. It's the second to last fight when he really comes to realization that I can do, if I put my mind to it, if I really want to, I can do this. And there, after the fight with the third general, when the people that are down in that area, down in the hole, realize that they can rebel against the generals, against the Spiral King, that's when things really take off, and when Simon really comes into his own, when he realizes, I can do these things.
Yeah, he takes solace in the fact that he's not Simon the hero. He's not the Simon the conqueror. He's not Simone the leader. He's Simone the digger. And so long as he maintains that core value of his, that he is the digger, he will always, his drill is the drill that will pierce the heavens. He'll always move forward. He'll always progress. Once he holds fast to that, then he truly becomes his own person. And exactly. It's honestly kind of a beautiful concept. So long as you stay true to you, so long as you understand who you are, and for lack of a better term, stay in your lane, you're not going to fail. You'll always persevere. You know your role, and you play your role. Some people, going out of this anime, but going facing towards real life, some people have a certain role in your life, be it the main character or a sub-character. Not everybody is their own main character. That's too many heroes, not enough sub-characters. But, you know, if you understand that from the get-go, you'll do a lot better in life. And when Simone realizes that, he starts forging his path. Because he realizes he might not be the main character. He might be the main character. He stops believing he's somebody else's side character. And he realizes that people are kind of following him to a point where he begins to have confidence in himself, and it's a beautiful thing. The anime is rife with beautiful metaphors, if you will, and some not so pretty ones, as we'll see later on.
Yes. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's still all accurate though.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, most definitely. I mean, there's quite a few episodes throughout where it really, really speaks, and it's like you don't understand what's happening before, but when it finally comes around to an end for that specific section, like Communist death, Simon's progression, it really brings everything together, and it really ties it all in. So and that's a concept all the way throughout that I find. Now, after they take care of the general, the third general, they fight him. It ends up televised to everyone, so they see these people rebelling against the beasts.
The original version for that, the original reason for that was to show humans will always be subjugated. Don't ever challenge the beastmen. It backfired gloriously.
Oh, yeah. Backfired hard. Against them, because they were supposed to show them defeating these humans, and instead it showed them being defeated by the humans. And so it really spoke to a lot of people.
Yeah, it shows the perseverance of what mankind can do once you get your mind to it.
Right.
And from there, you see that these things have an origination point, and you find out that through the Spiral King's daughter that, hey, there is a Spiral King in charge of everyone, in charge of the Beastmen, in charge of life on Earth being the way that it is. And now they have a new boss to defeat. They have a new goal to pierce the heavens, so to speak, a new ceiling to break through. And they go, they say, hey, this is the next logical step. Let's do it. And they begin their march onward, and they got to cross an ocean. And that's where you get a little bit of fan service. The little obligatory bath, the bathing suit scene.
Yeah, it's like they lived underground their whole lives. Where the hell the bathing suits come from? But okay.
Right.
And then not only that, they also go pretty, not pretty heavy, but they went for the innuendos.
Oh, big time. Almost everything in here was innuendo. I mean, if you look at the ship they overtook, the Daigoren, it's basically a mecha with a big dick.
Yeah, yeah. And then also, when they have to go into the water, there's a little thing that hangs down in between the legs that's a little pod. Well, it gets destroyed, and the guys act like their balls just got blown off. And then,
I didn't even notice that part.
Yeah. And then when there's drug underwater, right, and they can't find a way to get out, Simone takes Gurren Lagann and right up that same spot, but like a butthole now, rams drill bell. Yeah. Leon pops up and he goes, ooh, like he likes it. Like he just got rammed in the butt. So, I mean, this was It was a very innuendo episode. I mean, you don't see anything like this all the way throughout, and it's just all concentrated in this one. And it has to do with the second general, the Scorpion woman, having come back and trying to defeat them.
Yeah. Jeez.
So, I mean, it's fight heavy this episode, but it's very fan service, very innuendo-y. So it's definitely one that you can watch and you'll get a good chuckle out of, because it's like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. They needed to take a break from the seriousness of it all. I mean, Simon's finally moving on with everything. He's finally doing better. Also, around the same episode, Nia wanted to figure out what she can do for everyone. And
oh, yeah.
She tried cooking. She was testing some cooking. And then Rucio, I believe, is his name.
Yep. Became the taste tester.
Yep. And he tasted it. And he ended up being down and out almost the whole time.
Didn't quite agree with him.
Yeah. Like food poisoning. And so everyone is afraid, hesitant, scared to eat her food. Except Simon. Simon, he's sitting there. He's chowing down on it. He's like, I love this. This is great. Oh, you don't want that? Fine. I'll take it. Nom, 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 nom. You don't want this? Oh, I'll take that too. Nom, 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 nom. And it's the same thing for the little mole rat thing that they have with them. Buddha.
Yeah.
Buddha is the same way. He's like, Buddha's sitting there chowing down too, which I wouldn't want to know what the hell Buddha is, but...
Yeah, I always thought the name was Bunta. B-U-N-T-A. Not
no.
B-U-D-D-A.
No. B-O-O-T-A. Buddha.
Buddha. Okay.
Yep.
Huh. Learn something new every day.
Every day you can.
The more you know. It's kind of funny because it's very stereotypical. You have a pretty young girl who can't cook for shit, but the main love interest is like, I'll eat whatever you make because you made it. Harkens back to the whole, I made it, you better like it.
Right.
Mentality of the old Western style wives and husbands.
But in this case, he actually does love it. It's not, you better love it. He actually does love it. He thinks it tastes great for whatever reason.
Compared to the rocks he used to eat, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Granted, he probably didn't eat rocks, but still. Well, cooked food made with love is better than
fed a mole rat steak for digging just because. Yeah, I get that.
So, but all right. So moving on just a little bit. Once they're done with the water fight scene, they get on land and then they have to face two generals that they haven't faced before.
No, one general.
They faced them before. No, they faced the air raid guy. That's when they get the ability to fly. And then they have to face them both. The beastman who laid a trap and the air guy at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
In the fight,
while he's fighting the air guy, you have a bunch of these beastmen that can actually fly with their mechas. And so what ends up happening is Gurren Lagann gets launched into the air. He grabs one of them and just slaps it on his back. And it becomes a part of the Gurren Lagann, right? And now his Gurren Lagann can fly. And this is the fight before they get to the main area. So the third general, the one that tried baiting him in and televising their defeat to everyone... Before he gets brought in,
you're right. The air guy had a battle of his own. Lost one of the things that's able to help fly.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So that whole battle is about them finally gaining the ability to fly. So now this ship that they got from the first general, basically can walk on land. It can sail in the ocean. It can now also fly as well. So it's a trifecta. It's a beast of a machine now, thanks to them just like scavenging and compiling it all into one, even though it's by far not the strongest one out of them all.
True. You got a little triple threat going on right there. Yeah, there was almost too perfect for them to be able to get that gunman from the first general, because it appears to be the most versatile by far.
Well, it's not that it's versatile. It's that they made it versatile. because to get it to fly, they had to hijack something from someone else and then to make it work for them, or they had to do modifications and changes to it directly to make it so that way it can float. Because if you look at the front, even though it kind of looks like a normal ship, it actually looks more like a knife at the front.
Very true. Very, very true. I thought it was a phallic item, and it turns out later to be an anchor of some kind. So, again, versatile.
Versatile. Very versatile. So, yeah, they defeat the Air General. Not too much really happens there other than them basically defeating him because he's overconfident. Although you do hear a little bit about a timeline. And so the flying general, the third general, refers to him as still being young when he's 200 years old.
Yeah.
So it really brings in perspective, like, this has been a thing for hundreds of years. These people have been subjugated under the ground for hundreds of years. And they even refer to the Spiral Kings like it's, you know, he's immortal. He hasn't aged. It's been thousands of years. So you can guess that it's been at least 500 plus years that everyone's been underground. It's been a long time and since anyone's been to the surface.
Yeah, that's, now that you mention that, it's mind-boggling. Because who in their right mind would be subjugated underground for generations and just be okay with it when you have a drill that could breach the surface with right. No knowledge of anything bad with the surface? It just makes no sense.
No, it does not.
It's very fortuitous that everyone decided to go above ground roughly at the same time. It's almost like it was planned.
Well, actually, it's not that everyone decided to go above ground at the same time. And I'll reference this a little bit later on as well. They fight, right? You finally get a reference into how old he is. And then after they defeat the fourth general, the flying one, they finally get to where the Spiral King is. And that's when you fight both the flying general and the third general at the same time. So you fight generals 3 and 4 at the same time. The flying one, they're able to take out relatively quickly. But you also find out at around this same time, too, it's like day 7 of the battle, right? And so everyone's getting prepared. Because, you know, it's, I feel that a couple of different times that they took a very biblical aspect of it, however small it may be. But they do basically, on the 7th day, it's their final fight as well. And hopefully it's the final fight. And then they'll be able to, quote unquote, rest before more work continues on.
Yeah. You know, I definitely see the biblical equivalency in this particular aspect of it. But I think it's about as far as it goes in this instance. But when they're fighting and they are attacked by air, everyone goes to the sky and they're like, we can do this. And then they're also being attacked by the ground. And then Simone goes, you know what, guys? I've got this. Go handle that. And they're like, are you sure we could do it as a team? And Simone's like, no. Sit back, relax. I got this. Go save our ship.
Right. He tells them to go handle the guys on the ground. He'll handle the ones in the air. And so he's fighting the ones in the air. And you can tell they're both the top and bottom, air and ground, are starting to get overwhelmed. It's a lot. You know, it's been 7 days. They've been battling for 7 days. Also, something else I just remembered, too. The Spiral King also explains to Viral why they go to sleep every night and why the battles just weren't continuing all through the night and why there's no attacks going on at night.
Yes, that is correct. That happens just before this. And if memory serves, it's because when the Spiral King created them, he created imperfect beings.
Correct.
In the sense of they had to essentially rest. They wouldn't age, which was nice, but they couldn't reproduce either.
Right. And they had to rest. And if they didn't go to sleep every night, their cells, their body would literally break down and they would die. So they had to rest every night. There was like no ifs, ands, or buts. It was guaranteed fact that they had to do this. And that gave our group, Simone, Yoko, everyone else, time to be able to do repairs, get prepared for the next day, get a little bit of rest, because it wasn't a constant onslaught from them or to the enemy. It gave them time to rest or recoup. It gave them time to be able to get their bearings, make plans, do what they need to do to prepare for the next day.
Well, the good news is, we'll reference back to this a little bit later. But anyway, going back to the fight, Simone goes and does the super omega highly detailed drill, and he knocks out, I would say, almost half of the entire air fleet. And then once he's finished with that, he jumps down and no one can find him. He goes, where the heck is he?
Well, and it's keep in mind that it's not at that point when he drops down and hides.
You're right. I'm skipping.
It's the third general is basically an armadillo, and he goes over to where the Spiral King is, because that's where they are. It looks like a giant drill, right?
Yeah, a giant spiral, which giant is why spiral. You think that the Spiral King, he lives in a spiral tower. Very, very cliched, but you figured that's the reasoning for it.
Right. And so the third general goes over there, and he starts spinning. And it creates this kind of vortex because the air commander's been taken out because they had a whole bunch of other people that saw the fight between the third general and Simone. And then the third general losing inspired everyone. So they went out, they hijacked their own gunmen. And so...
Yeah, that's when the broadcast rallies everyone that was being shown to this grand fight. So instead of just being almost overwhelmed, now they're actually gaining ground because now they have the upper hand in numbers. I will say that it's very peculiar that everyone that they were able to, all the Gundams they were able to take over were being piloted so effortlessly. Whereas when we first saw it, only a certain few people were able to pilot Gundams.
You mean gunmen, not Gundam?
Sorry, I was close. Gunman. Gunman.
All right. So I do agree, but, you know, it harkens back to the very, very first comment I made, or not the very, but a first comment I made where it definitely set the groundwork where anything goes from the very beginning, and they don't break that concept all the way throughout. If you want to do it, you can do it, and there will be a way for you to do it.
Yeah. But it just seems like it reminds me of Dragon Ball, where once you hit level 3 Super Saiyan, level 1 Super Saiyan seems to be accessed by everyone.
Right.
The ability of one raises the for them all. Like, okay, to give you an idea, their mechanic, when he first started, couldn't read, and yet somehow he's reverse engineering flight into a gunman that has no original ability of flight.
Well, he knew how to read a little bit, and it just goes, and they explain this, too, a little bit later on. It's not too much later on, but a little bit later on, why this is, why the things are the way they are.
Yeah, we'll explain that when the time comes, but I thought that was an interesting point to bring up now.
Right.
But as you said, that they got reinforcements. Mm-hmm. And they started winning the air battle. That's when the armadillo general was like, hey, we need to protect the king at all costs. And he reverts into a 100% defense only tactic where he just spins in extreme speed, creating a force field of wind and dust and dirt surrounding the spiral fortress.
Right.
And when...
Because it's being used in line with the spiral fortress. So the spiral fortress is also spinning as well. And so all these guys are trying to break the spinning, the cycle, right? By flying into it, and everyone's like, stop, you know, just stop. There's no point in trying to ram into it. But you have
be an idiot.
Yeah, but all these people are being idiots anyway, ramming into it, going, yeah, let's do it.
This is gonna hurt.
A little. Just a little.
Oh man.
But
so
But then around that time when Nia, she broadcasts herself saying, please stop. You're not going to be able to break through it. We need to come up with a better plan. Everyone kind of hold back a little bit. Around that time, everyone goes, where's Simon?
Yeah. And no one can find him. It's very confusing for a few minutes. Yep. And then you realize he's been digging. Underneath.
Oh, yeah.
Simon the digger has been digging.
Go figure. And so he digs right to where the third general is. And he pops up right underneath him. And so the general, like, laughs because he's like, I'm impenetrable. You can't even break through here. So he slams down while still spinning, thinking he crushed him. And everyone's distraught. But then you hear Simon say, thank you for that little extra force. It allowed my drill to penetrate. And
yeah,
and he's able to kill the general. He's able to stop the spinning and the fortress stops spinning.
Yeah, well, he's able to reverse the flow of the rotation. And the general is like, no, 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 you do that. That's devastating. Don't do that. And Simone's like, oh, this? And he does it. And it is glorious. And when the spiral came, you assume that Beastman has perished due to that, but they never really confirm that any of the generals, minus the first one, is killed, essentially.
Well, I mean, it's pretty safe assumption because you didn't see them escape or get shot out or anything like that. So it's a pretty safe assumption to assume that they are dead.
True. Now, what I will say is one main character who seems to be on the side of evil and has been with them every step of the way. I forget what his name is. He was a Beastman. He was the very first.
V-Roll.
B-Roll. Wait, V-Roll or B-Roll?
V-Roll. V-I-R-A-L. Think viral?
Viral video.
Yeah, but they call it V-Roll. They always refer V-Roll. To him as V-Roll.
He's a viral infection.
Indeed.
Anyway, he is on board almost every ship imaginable trying to regain his honor. And it's almost impossible. And finally, the Spiral King gives him a body that needs no sleep and will never age.
Right.
And he thinks that is a...
gives him an immortal body is what the Spiral King says. And he didn't give him an immortal body to defeat the humans with. He gave him an immortal body to be able to tell the story of what happened for generations without worry.
Yeah. That was, again, that's revealed after he loses yet another fight.
Yes. Yes. Well, right after the spiral tower basically stops, it's discovered that when all these pods drop off, that it's actually a giant gunman, like this mountain-sized gunman that the Spiral King is controlling and just obliterating all the enemy forces with, and even more gunmen are flying out of him.
Yeah, it's like its very own little fortress, essentially. Just everybody he's ever needed is self-sustaining, self-operating. It's its own little country, but essentially built for battle.
For a very particular reason, to keep everyone underground, so they need to be able to migrate around the world and not worry about things like that.
Yeah.
Also, because it is the last battle and all this is going on, Simon has Nia with him and they're trying to get to the Spiral King, who is up at the top.
Yeah, and when they finally do get within eyesight, Nia jumps out basically and is like, Father, why are you doing this? He goes, Daughter, I thought I would never see you again. It's a shame. And so they begin fighting and you see this gigantic mountain of machinery. I might add, how the heck is this thing even moving?
Through his spiral power. That's
an insane amount of spiral power.
Right. It is. But also, when he and Simon are fighting, because V-Roll comes in and Simon like effortlessly destroys him, just without breaking a sweat. So the Spiral King goes into his own spiral, and he doesn't have to do any movement on his own, right? He's able to control it through his power. And he sits there, and he's trying to destroy it, and they get locked in. And so what ends up happening is they get into a particular situation where they're both gridlocked, and the Spiral King literally just breaks out of his own gunman and says, "I should have known that a simple gunman wouldn't be able to do it," and just walks over and starts decimating the other gunman, just like effortlessly with his own hands.
Makes you think how powerful this guy actually is, you know?
Right. Well,
he's able just to destroy everything with his hands.
Yeah.
And you see his star power, if you call it that. Spiral power just shooting out of his head like hair. He's a bald man, but he's just so overflowing with this energy that it just keeps just billowing out of him. Can't control it, kind of thing.
So he's about to kill Simon, right? Or Simon.
Simon.
And Simon grabs the core. And, you know, the Spiral King has a patch of hair in his chest and almost a perfect circle, like everything else. And Simon puts his core right in the center and turns it and blows a hole that size all the way through him.
Yeah. Hey, he just has this gigantic hole. And true to most anime, you know, without lungs, heart, and stomach, you're able to speak no problem.
Yeah, well, you know, speak his final words no problem. You know, true to most anime. But he does give him a warning. He says when the humanity reaches 1 million, he says, you know, then your destruction will be assured.
And the moon will be its messenger. Essentially, it's a doomsday, a very, very grayscaled, very bland, cryptic warning for him that maybe he should listen to, but really doesn't pay any mind to it. But what he also says that I find kind of important is that his spiral power has eclipsed his own without him realizing it, which means that Simone is actually more powerful than the Spirit King. And the Spirit King was so powerful, his spirit energy, or his spiral energy, was shooting out of his head. He couldn't hold it all in. So I've got a theory that Simone has the same issue where he can't hold it all in, where a lot of it's just escaping of its own.
Right. And they do reference this a little bit towards the end, too.
That's right. That's right. Okay.
All right. Yeah, so.
You got a point.
Before we skip far too ahead, right around here.
At the end of this is episode 15, where they do something kind of awesome. And they do a whole anime recap up to the point.
Right.
And they show writing style and stuff like that and drawing style. It's honestly refreshing.
It doesn't go into the finer details of what went on, but it gives you the highlights so you get the main story behind it all.
Yeah, it's a nice little, in case you missed a few things that were important. But here's where my frustration with this anime comes into play. Because after this amazing drawing style and amazing storytelling and lightheartedness and just the craziness, wackiness of everything goes on, after episode 15, they do a time skip. I want to say from roughly episode 16 to 20-ish. They just phoned in the job as far as anime style goes. The drawing, the detail work, the everything that you came to love, just gone.
Well, just gone. It was still there, but they had to age everyone. So they're moving from a style where the world is open and there's no buildings and technology's not really that rampant to... And they jump forward 7 years to basically you have a giant metropolis. They won, and so Simon is now the leader of this new government, and everyone else is there too, with the exception of Yoko, who is nowhere to really be found. She just kind of went off and did her own thing because she didn't want to be a part of the new government or anything like that.
And, yeah, she mentioned that she's not a government type.
Right.
And she doesn't like the rules and regulations that everyone's being placed under. So
she prefers a more free life. And then Ryosu is also the second in command. And so he's been doing a lot of things. And Some of it Simon doesn't know about because he doesn't.
A lot of it Simon doesn't know about.
Yeah, he doesn't know a lot about it. Yeah,
doesn't care about ruling. But Ryasu comes from a very strict, very
like things have to be done. Yeah,
yeah. In order, he's very. I want to say atypical, but I'm pretty sure I'm wrong with that.
He is following in his father's footsteps, so to speak, in a manner of speaking, anyways. Also, they're sending a rocket to the moon because they still heed the warning, but they're not sure what's going on. So they're sending a rocket, a probe, up to the moon to figure out what's going on. So that way they can either lay to rest the Spiral King's claims or prepare for the worst. And around this same time, V-Roll shows up again. And this time he's fighting against them, but as a rebel, so to speak.
Yeah. And you find out that Rossiu has decided to take it upon himself to create a census of the people, because that 1 million person marker is really important to him. And he's taking it incredibly seriously, which he should. Turns out he should. But this very specific wording of the king was, once a million naked monkeys above ground, the moon will basically kill you. The above ground part is where I kind of get detached from, because he didn't say a million total. He just said a million above ground. So Rossiu's bringing everybody he can find above ground so that he can count them all. I believe in my heart that that was one more point of bringing this tragedy a lot closer.
Right.
Now, what V'Rall was fighting for was not everyone wanted to go above ground. You got to think of it like a, there's a very, very clear indication. There's a isolated tribe in the middle of the ocean. They're very primitive, roughly Stone Age-esque. No contact with the outside life, no nothing. And they want to be left alone so bad that they kill anyone or anything.
Well, it's not that they kill anyone or anything. They just, in general, they don't want to be a part of it. So they're trying to go away. And these beastmen are trying to put them back underground because that's what those people want. And it's not all beastmen. It's regular people, too. But
yeah,
they're trying to go back underground because that's what they want. And so inadvertently, if the terminology and wording is meant to be taken literal, Ryosu literally helped bring about the million naked apes on the surface by forcing them to come out from underground, by forcing them to be on the surface. He helped create this disaster. Now, Simon was very upset. He's like, why are you forcing people above ground? You shouldn't be forcing people to do that. And his reaction was, it's to create an accurate census so we know how many are there. Because he said, once we reach 1 million, the moon will be our messenger of destruction. I took this seriously. You obviously don't care about society as a whole. To which Simon says to him, well, what are you going to do once you find that millionth person? Or what are you going to do once 1 million is about to be reached? Are you going to just start killing people? Are you going to do what your dad did, basically?
Now, I will say that right there, that very specific line makes me draw a comparison between Rossiu, Rossiu's father, and the Spiral King. Were they wrong in trying to protect everybody? Because essentially, as messed up as this solution is, it all comes from a point of self and population preservation. Always have the best interest in mind of the majority, even at the sacrifice of the minority. And it becomes a huge plot point later on, because you can't save them all. At what point do you say we have to go? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And also, around the same time, he becomes terribly troubled by how Simon is reacting and doing things as well. He finds he's not doing enough. Around the same time, you find out the different places that everyone's at. It kind of brings you up to speed. At the same time, almost all the other main characters that were a plot point are still a plot point, but they're also the leaders of the current government that are in there. It also, they took cells from the Spiral King and created a biocomputer. Ryosu created a biocomputer to talk to the Spiral King to get information about what's going to be happening.
He was, they chopped his head off essentially and then took that because they wanted the brain mainly.
Right.
So they can try to access the memories so that Rossiu could find out exactly what was said. Now this, I have to point out, was a super top secret. No one was supposed to know about it. Only his most trusted aides were aware of this. And yeah, it was, you find out that the government that they have is a shadow government where you've got figureheads and then Rossiu playing everybody essentially for the public view.
Right.
To try to create the persona of law and order.
No, and he creates law and order, but he creates law and order in the way that he feels it needs to be done. Yeah. Also, around the same time when he brings the thing back, when he brings the Spiral King online, the population also reaches 1 million. You see the counter go to 1 million for the moon. And then Nia becomes the messenger for this group called the Anti-Spirals.
The new big bad, the biggest of the bad.
Right. And so what ends up happening is she starts talking to Simon, about what's going on. Like, you finally reached 1 million population, you're danger level 2, your spiral power is dangerous. We're enacting the extermination protocol. And so, Basically, what she says is, the moon's going to come crash down on Earth, and you're all going to die.
And then Rossiu goes, oh, crap, what are we going to do? And you'll notice that all of the gunmen that they once had are now considered to be obsolete and replaced. And Rossiu kind of dismantles everything for what he thinks are more efficient and better ways to fight and better ways to police their own people. He's not really looking too far past the government, so to speak.
Right.
And in this time of confusion, they try to fight an anti-spiral gunman that shows up and starts wreaking havoc.
Right.
Once they're finally able to destroy it with Gurren Lagann, it kind of breaks into smaller pieces and it just explodes all around and just creates mass havoc and hysteria. And Rossiu is super, super upset because why is the leader's job is not to fight on the front lines. The leader's job is to make the tough decisions and send other people to fight on the front lines to die, so to speak. And that's where Simone is like, no, this is not how this is supposed to run. You guys trust me to protect you. I'm going to protect you. That's my job. My job is first and foremost to protect its citizens. And Rossiu says, no, as a leader, your job first and foremost is to protect yourself and guide us through these hard times by sacrificing others. And while I see both sides in a real situation and a scenario, honestly, the best person for the job should be thrown out there. And if it's the leader, he should have gone out there, because if you look at it, he's just a figurehead. He's not really doing anything. It's Rossiu that's doing it all. And realistically speaking, I can see how Rossiu would get mad, because Rossiu is not popular at all.
Right.
He's rallied everybody behind. Yeah, right now. But he's rallied everybody behind a leader that he propped up. And when this leader goes out, if this leader dies, then the morale dies with him. So as far as a power struggle goes, I can see how he would need people in place.
Well, and it's not only that. I mean, like, in general, he seems like he's doing what he can to make sure his goal and his means are met, right? And he comes off as arrogant, one would even say, in how he's doing things. And it's not so much that he's trying to control things from the back end. He's trying to make sure things are done right, to what he feels is best. And
therein lies the issue.
Right.
To what he feels is best. And he is a survivalist above everything else.
Exactly.
And Simone isn't. Simone is, I'm going to save everyone.
Right.
I'm gonna throw my life away for everyone.
Well, not so much in the fact that he's wanting to throw away his life. He's like, I'm gonna do what I can to save everyone and make sure I come back alive to the very least save everyone else.
Yeah. Right? Well, obviously he doesn't want to die, but if it was a choice of him dying or somebody else, he's gonna go with him all day. He's gonna save the other person. That's what a hero does. That's what makes him so endearing and so beloved by the populace currently. Now, after this one catastrophe, these people who live in the capital have gotten so used to a certain kind of lifestyle that they now depend on this lifestyle. And it's kind of funny because you see businessmen, hey, my building was destroyed. Who's going to pay for it? You've got to pay for it. The government did this. The government's got to fix it.
Right. And it definitely speaks. It speaks to the hive mind mentality. When things go wrong, people want to cast blame. And they see Simone as the person that's causing this problem. So they instantly, without really much effort, turn on him completely, saying he needs to pay for everything. It's his fault. Yeah. It's his fault we're going to be attacked by these creatures because everything was broadcasted to everyone. It's his fault that this is going on. It's his fault that we're all going to die. He needs to pay. Let's sacrifice him, as if that's going to fix everything. I mean, like, you're all going to die regardless, whether it's his fault or not. But
it's unfortunate, but it's crowd justice, public justice.
Right.
It's the court of public opinion, and if you're found guilty, even if you're the only one to be able to fix everything, you're still in the wrong.
Exactly. And
even Rossiu, unfortunately, has the same opinion. He knows you need a fall guy.
Yeah.
If you can blame that guy for everything and then punish said guy, the population's going to be happy. The problem is not fixed, but the population's going to be happy.
Yeah, they'll be subdued for a short time, and once they're no longer subdued, if you don't have a solution or a fix in place, the same thing's going to happen, and you're going to be the one that's going to be looked at for for the next prosecution.
You got a fall guy. Unfortunately, this time it's a very public figure sent to prison, and everyone's happy that something was done, even though nothing really got fixed.
Yeah, exactly.
But
man, just so much is going on. Ooh, we're not even halfway. We're not even three quarters through it. Like, in general, realistically speaking, we're maybe about 18 episodes maybe in. And there's still about another 10 to go to discuss. There's just so much that goes on. The writers definitely knew what they were doing in general. To speak to what you were just talking about, a lot of, especially right now, what's going on in general can be attributed to today's political system and society and everything else that's going on. It's a lot. It's a lot. So I don't think we'll be able to get it done in a second episode. I think we have to go for an episode three.
You know what? I think it does warrant that. This section of it was unfortunately a lot bigger than I anticipated, and I apologize about that. But hey, you know, I guess I can just choose the anime that requires a longer time to talk about.
That's all good. Well, we don't know about what we're going to be choosing next, but I do have a feeling though that we will be able to wrap this up in episode three. To say the least. So stay tuned for part three next week.
For the finale.
Yeah, hopefully. Maybe.
Oh, no, we can do it. We can do it. All the heavy parts are just about about covered. We got a few more fine points that are real pivotal to the storyline.
I would argue. I mean, like, in general, all the way through, looking at it as a whole, I mean, the latter part, man, there's a lot that goes on. I mean, like, it's only about maybe 9 more episodes to go, but a lot goes on.
Yeah, blink and you'll miss it.
Exactly. Well, I think that's about it for today. Feel free to join us next week here on the Feudal Anime Podcast. Feel free to reach out to us as well. You reach us at feudalanimepodcast@gmail.com. Have a great day.
Later, man.